This morning's reading is Psalm 10 and can be found on page 547 of the Pew Bibles. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? In his arrogance, the wicked man hunts down the weak who are caught in the scheme of devices. He boasts about the cravings of his heart. He blesses the greedy and reviles the Lord. In his pride, the wicked man does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. His ways are always prosperous. Your laws are rejected by him. He sneers at all his enemies. He says to himself, "Nothing will ever shake me." He swears, "No one will ever do me harm." His mouth is full of lies and threats. Trouble and evil are under his tongue. He lies in wait near the villages. From ambush he murders the innocent. His eyes watch in secret for his victims. Like a lion in cover, he lies in wait. He lies in wait to catch the helpless. He catches the helpless and drags them off in his net. His victims are crushed. They collapse. They fall under his strength. He says to himself, "God will never notice. He covers his face and never sees." Arise, Lord. Lift up your hand, O God. Do not forget the helpless. Why does the wicked man revile God? Why does he say to himself, "He won't call me to account"? But you, God, see the trouble of the afflicted. You consider their grief and take it in hand. The victims commit themselves to you. You are the helper of the fatherless. Break the arm of the wicked man. Call the evildoer to account for his wickedness. That would not otherwise be found out. The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations will perish from his land. You, Lord, hear the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them, and you listen to their cry, defending the fatherless and the oppressed, so that mere earthly mortals will never again strike terror. This is the word of the Lord.
Can you remember the two words which I left you with before? Trouble and bubble. Those are very important words in that song we heard about earlier. And they're things which we can think about from this psalm and from other parts of the Bible. Trouble, things coming at you unawares or things creeping up on you. Trouble is a very personal thing. For one person, pain and suffering and torment is another person's adventure holiday. It's different for everyone, isn't it? Things that one person would find difficult, another person would find easy, and vice versa. There are some things that perhaps we all think of being trouble out there in the big bad world. Things like global warming, things like North Korea, things like vicious joggers. Anyone heard about the famine that's sweeping across Africa and the southern Middle East? We don't hear about that in the news, do we? But that's big trouble for all the people living there. Here's one. Now this picture, do you know sometimes when a picture really kind of hits home to you? Anyone seen this picture here? It's a beach in Cadiz in Spain. And all the holidaymakers are there. And in the middle of it all, there's a lot of refugees coming on shore, trying to get away from what they're getting away from or trying to start a new life. But this trouble, they're fleeing trouble and they're coming there to this land where everyone's just having a nice holiday. It's a good symbol, I think, of how things are now. What about personal trouble, though? Things can attack us personally, can't they? There's things out there in the world, things that we're contending with ourselves, things like debt, things like our health, things like housing, things like body image. It's a big thing, isn't it? We're all being measured against how we should look. Psalm 10, if you're listening to what Edna was saying, Psalm 10 makes trouble not just a thing, it makes it into a person. Did you hear what she was saying about this person who's got all these evil schemes? Do you remember those things in the 70s, those pictures in the 70s which showed a little boy, a little girl holding hands, and it used to say, love is. Do you remember those? Love is this. Well, this trouble is, it's all here in this psalm. Okay? Verse 4. In his pride, the wicked does not seek him, that's God. In all his thoughts, there's no room for God. So trouble is godless. And we can see that around us, can't we? More and more things that used to be Christian are now secular. Even funerals, things like that, are godless. Trouble is godless. And when trouble comes towards us quite often, it's got the godless quality. Verse 5, his ways are always prosperous. He is haughty and your laws are far from him. He sneers at all his enemies. I love that. He sneers at his enemies. Trouble is shameless. Who was watching the athletics? Yeah? All that big reaction about Justin Gatlin. And I'm not going into the ins and outs of that one, but someone could stand there despite the fact that people know they've cheated and just take the glory. Trouble is shameless. And there's lots of other examples we can think of in the world around us where people just don't care. They just come out and do what they want and they've got no shame. Trouble is deep inside us. Verse 7, his mouth is full of curses and lies and threats. This evil personification of trouble we're thinking about in this psalm. Trouble and evil are under his tongue. Do you know people when they open their mouth and you think, oh, what's going to come out? There are people like that, and we can be like that, all of us sometimes, can't we? But the thing about it is, it's one thing talking about the tongue, and in James 3, we know about the passage which talks about the tongue causing so much trouble. But Jesus knew that trouble comes from deeper in us than just from our tongues. In Matthew 15, verse 8, Jesus says this, the things that come out of our mouths come from the heart. Out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murder, adultery. What's inside us is the problem. It's not just the things we say, not just bad language or things that come out of our mouths. It's right deep inside us. And we all know that time when we've had an argument with somebody, we've fallen out with somebody, we've kind of patched it up, but we haven't. You know what I mean? It's still there. And next time there's going to be a fallout with that person, we're going to use that again. It hasn't been resolved. It's deep inside, waiting to get out. And this verse 8, keeps on coming back. He lies in wait. Trouble is sneaky, isn't it? Trouble lies in wait for us, as in the psalm. And 1 Peter 5, it says this, verse 8, the devil prowls around like a lion. Gets this image of trouble being like a lion, something that's sort of sneaky and out there. So if you take all these verses together, trouble is big trouble, isn't it? And the thing about trouble is that it leads to fear. And fear is when we all look to put ourselves away in a bubble. Now, this is a serious sermon, of course, as all my sermons always are. But, and I don't want you to laugh at the next thing. We should take this in the spirit of seriousness, okay? But today, more than any other time, we can lock ourselves away in a bubble. And none more so than with texting on phones. No laughing. People are living their lives, aren't they? And it's funny to laugh at people kind of walking around, bumping into things with their phones. But we know this is true, don't we? We see it all around us, people living in bubbles, okay? But there's a sort of darker side to this as well, apart from laughing at people in their own little worlds. Social media, people on Facebook and Twitter and things like that, it kind of homes in on what we think. So if you've got an opinion, a political opinion over here, you think this, it will find out what it is and it will kind of reinforce it. So all you see on your computer is things that agree with you. So we can all get into a bubble because We do it ourselves and the computer helps us and we end up surrounded by things that we agree with and we're not challenged anything. So I want to do a quick test today to see how bubbled we might all be, okay? Now, not to get this wrong, don't take this wrong, because we all get into habits. We all have our favourite brand of coffee and our favourite programme, our favourite book and all these things. But just to give us an idea to think about how much we are living in a bubble. Okay, first question is this. When was the last time you made a new friend? When was the last time you made a new friend? You don't have to answer. When was the last time you had an opinion on something and it completely changed around? When was the last time that happened to you? And how did it happen, I wonder? What made you change your mind? How many friends have you got who are from a completely different background, from a completely different culture, who are very, very different to you? And just to make sure the finger's pointing this way as well, when was the last time somebody stood here, made you think about all this, made you think about the bubble that we're in? Because it's our job as preachers to challenge us, to make us feel a bit uneasy and to challenge all our opinions, okay? So the question remains, how do we unbubble ourselves if we feel that we are in a bubble, okay? Well, here's a thought from a Christian writer called Jeff Goins. Now, this is a guy who is an American, and he spent a lot of his life in a very, very comfortable position, in a very comfortable church, living a very nice life, surrounding himself with a bubble, if you like. As we all do as Christians, we do this just as much as anybody else. He went on a missionary journey to Ethiopia, and that changed him, because he saw people happy with very little. People who were happy when they didn't have all the things that we have here in the West. And he's got three bits of advice for us if you're thinking about coming out of the bubble. Number one, admit that you are in one in the first place. Number two, step out of your comfort zone that you're in. And number three, put yourself in a situation that will require courage. So that's advice from a Christian. 1 John 4:18, very, very famous verse. Perfect love drives out fear. If fear is the problem, if fear is the thing that makes us go into the bubble, then God can deal with the fear that we have that will stop us wanting to do it. That's another bit of advice. But as usual, the best bit of advice comes from Jesus. Okay. Now in Mark 10, verses 46, 52, a very, very famous passage, Jesus heals a man called Bartimaeus. You've probably all heard this passage at some time, I hope you have. Very famous passage, but what strikes you about the passage is this. Remember Bartimaeus is crying out, Jesus of Nazareth, have mercy on me, Jesus son of David, have mercy on me. And eventually he gets to see Jesus, and Jesus looks at him and says, what do you want me to do? Now, on the face of it, that is a very strange question. Here's Jesus, somebody who goes around healing people, and there's a blind man. It's a bit of a no-brainer, really, isn't it? But Jesus asks the question, what do you want me to do? And the reason for that is, not everyone who's blind wants to see. In those days, if you're a beggar, it was a living of sorts. If you could see, it was a new start. You had to start all over again, didn't you? And a lot of us, the question remains, do we really want to see? Are we just happy to carry on as we are? Do we want our eyes to be open? Because if you want them to be, Jesus will open your eyes to things around you. And it might not be that comfortable. Jesus asked the question, what do you want me to do? Do you want to see or not? But Jesus was really, really keen on unbubbling people. And we can think of a few examples, okay? The rich young ruler, yeah? The guy came to him and said, I've done all these things, I've kept all these commandments, what do I need to do? Jesus says, well, you need to get rid of all your wealth and money. And he goes away, brokenhearted. Jesus could see he lived in this bubble of wealth. He had everything he needed, but he didn't want to go outside of that bubble. And Jesus wanted him not to be miserable because he was poor, but Jesus wanted him to step outside and see what the rest of the world was like. Nicodemus, came to visit Jesus in the middle of the night. He was a religious man. I don't know if you know the story. He's a Pharisee. He came to see Jesus. But he was living in a religious bubble. Yeah? He knew all the law. He knew all the things you had to do. But he didn't know God. He didn't know the Holy Spirit. He didn't know what it was to have a real, real close relationship with God. Jesus burst his bubble. He said, you know, you've got to be born again. You've got to see things in new ways. Zacchaeus, the tax collector, lived in a bubble of fear. Everyone hated him. Not surprising, really, given what his job was. But Jesus wanted him to be free from that bubble. He wanted people to get on with him. Martha lived in a bubble of being a domestic goddess. Have we got any domestic goddesses out there? Or men? But she was in a bubble, wasn't she? All she could see was her kitchen and the pots and pans and what she was cooking. And for her, her whole life was being Nigella Lawson. But Jesus said, stop doing that. Look further. Mary's here. She's listening to spiritual things. You don't have to stay in that bubble. James and John live in a bubble. All they could see was this glory when they'd be sat either side of Jesus. And Jesus says, no, think about now. Don't be like that. Don't just have your head so full of your own glory. But also, when Jesus unbubbles people, he's not just thinking of what they're doing now. He's thinking about the future. He wants us to wake up and look around us. Jesus spends a lot of the time in the Gospels talking about the end times, about when he comes back again. He wants us to be ready for it, doesn't he? He wants us to be alert and ready and waiting for the time when he comes back to earth. And I wonder how many of us are like that. How many of us wake up in the morning and think, well, maybe it could be today. We tend to get so involved in our lives, don't we? Mind you, that's not to say you can take it too far, okay? And we all heard of people who think, it's going to be now. It's going to be this year. It's going to be that date. There's a lady called Ellen White in the 19th century who prophesied the world would end in 1843. And then in 1844. And then in 1845. And in 1851 until people stopped listening to her. But the king of all the end of the world predictions was a guy called Harold Camping from America, who predicted the world would end on September the 6th, 1994. I'm glad to tell you it didn't. But then it had another go, May the 21st, 2011. That didn't happen, as you may have noticed. And October the same year, he said he might have just got it slightly wrong. Didn't happen. But then Harold Camping repented because he read the Bible. It's always a good idea. And realized that Jesus said that nobody would know the time. So we can't know the exact date, but it's good to be ready for when Jesus comes back. Verse 17 of Psalm 10 says this, you hear, O Lord, the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them. You listen to their cry. When we're aware of all the trouble around us, when we're aware of the trouble inside us, of the people around us who are suffering, we need to pray. That's all we can do. We need to pray and pray and pray. Do we pray for everything or just the small things? We pray for the big things, the things that are too big, the impossible international situations. Pray for them. God hears our prayer for everything. So, trouble will come to all of us at one time or another. It's how we respond that counts. Do we hide away in our comfort? Do we trust God who listens to our cry? And Jesus is challenging us all the time to come outside of our bubble, wherever it is, to come outside and to do the work of his kingdom, which can only happen outside of the bubble. Just a case in point, as I'm wrapping up, just a case in point. I don't know if you noticed the parish centre. It's the new lounge has nooks. It has nooks, has places where you could go and sit and be on your own or be with your little clientele of people who are just around you, your little bubble of friends. We mustn't fall into that way, guys. We need to be open and mixing and looking out for people around us and making new friends, new contacts, and not just getting into that little zone. Having said all of that, though, I want to leave you with this thought Psalm 32. Famous words from Psalm 32. You, God, are my hiding place. The time when we do need a bubble, and sometimes we do need something. We need to run away and feel protected. And when we do need that, the person we should go to is God. He is our hiding place in times of trouble.